Yeah, Bob's correct. We do one genetic evaluation that combines all the breeds together. We don't do a separate genetic evaluation for each of the breeds. We combine them all. And so that creates some of its own challenges and interesting situations. So I'm going to talk a little bit about standardization of contemporary groups, international ID, same parent multiple IDs, same parent or the same animal multiple IDs, matching up the pedigree ID with the genomic ID so we can include genomic information. I'll talk a little bit about our common interface that we've developed to help with this record flow, and give you a little bit, a few numbers on the IGS database, and talk a little bit about our weekly evaluation, the way we've set it up. So first, we'll just talk about standardization. You know, most breed associations keep, 90% of the records, they keep the same. It's pedigree information, it's phenotypes, it's birth dates, and all of those kinds of things. You'd kind of think that it'd be easy to put them together because they all keep the same information. Turns out they're not as easy as you first think, but with BIF guidelines, a lot of that has been standardized, so the same sorts of parameters are used by almost all of the breed associations. One of the biggest issues we have are with breed codes. BIF has identified a certain number of breeds, and we can handle all those because almost all of the breed associations use the same codes. But there are some 30 or 40 other breeds floating around in different databases that there isn't a standard code for identified by BIF, and so we have to work through those issues. The other biggest issue I have with combining data is the multiple birth code. Sometimes breeds don't use the same code. They might code an ET calf as born single, but it was an ET calf, where the way the system was set up is there's only one code. It's either single or ET. And so we have to work through those. And then in some cases on the international data, we have a units issue, kilograms versus pounds, or that sort of thing. But that's pretty much. The one thing I always have to remind myself is we're working with field data. There's nothing that tests systems like field data. You set up a nice system that says, here comes twins in here, and they have to be born on the same day, and they have to be out of the same sire. In field data, you've proven wrong. We've had twins born 3 days apart, and they actually were. And we've had twins out of two different sires, and that have been confirmed to their sires. So you have to kind of, that doesn't really affect genetic evaluation because they get kind of filtered out and that sort of stuff. But when you're working with the data sets, you have to recognize that thing happens. Probably a more critical thing is contemporary groups. Because a contemporary group is really that primary unit that is used to find genetic differences. And the way contemporary groups are formed determines outcome to a large degree. And we always compare one evaluation to the next. We used to do it semi-annually, so every 6 months we were looking at changes in evaluations. And we try to trace those changes to what caused them, and most of the changes are because new data came in. But every once in a while, you'll get an animal, a sire, that didn't have any new data come in and he changed. And we start looking through that. Invariably, it's because the contemporary groups changed. Somebody changed a breeder out of some animals. Somebody changed the contemporary group designation on some animals. They were pulled out of one contemporary group and formed into another, and that kind of alters things. If that's done on a large scale or affecting one particular sire's progeny, then that sire's EPDs are going to change. So that's an issue that we have to work through as we do it. And as we form contemporary groups, you know, you start start with a breeder ID, you have the bird, the sex, the birth date, and you start grouping things together. If anything of those change, then you're going to run into some contemporary groups. One of the biggest issues that we face in contemporary groups is breed associations. We like the data to determine the contemporary group. We want the breeder, the herd ID, the weaning weight date, the sex, to help us form contemporary groups. But associations also assign an internal contemporary group. Some associations, as part of their rules, say that animals have to be submitted to the association at the same time to be contemporaries. And that means the association assigns an ID to that group that came in. If an animal that would have otherwise been a contemporary was submitted to the association at a different time, the association says, I want that in a different contemporary. So we have to carry this breeder association contemporary group through in the evaluation. But the biggest issue is making sure that all partners of IGS understand how contemporary groups are formed so that they can submit the data to fit those, get the results that they want in the group of contemporary groups they want. All right, the next thing is international ID. When we went to the new BOLT system, we adopted an international ID, an ICAR ID, and it consists of a prefix on every ID that consists of a breed code of 3 digits or 3 characters, a country code of 3 characters, a sex code, and then that association's number that they assign to that animal. So the breed code is the breed code of the association that assigned that number in the country, and the sex is the sex of the animal, and then that number reflects what that breed association number is assigned to that animal. So a couple of examples that you can see, a limousine registration number, an Angus registration number. If all the breed associations use that number when they're referring to that animal, then the data matches real well. We don't have too much of an issue. But that ID has to be used not only for the animal, but in that animal record is its sire, and it has to be used for its sire, its dam, and if it's an ET, with recip information for the recip. Okay, the biggest problem is when sires and dams have 2 different IDs. So in this example, you have Bull A has 5 progeny, Bull Little A has 3 progeny, and you go through evaluation, and Bull Little A gets an evaluation, and Bull Big A gets an evaluation. And then we find out, whoops, that's the same bull. So we have to go through and merge those records, but they originally had 2 different IDs. So what you really want is all of them merge under one, and you get Bull A with 8 progeny. A very similar kind of situation. You have the same animal record submitted to multiple associations. And we've had situations where an animal record with weaning and some set of phenotypic data sent to 3 different associations. Well, in the merging process, we've got to figure out, we don't really merge those because you need to have a consistent contemporary breeder and that sort of thing. So we have to figure out which is the best record. And of course, we'll take the source record. If the record came from the limousine and it's a limousine animal, we're going to take that record. Otherwise, we start bouncing through and see which record has the most data. And we use that. And then we have to coordinate the dams, because if the dams' IDs are different, we have to make sure they we use the right dam. So those are kind of the biggest problems. Then with the use of genomic information, the genomic information doesn't come as part of the record from the breed association. It comes directly from the genomics lab. And so the genomics lab may or may not have the international ID from as how they identify that genomic record. Well, if they don't, then it's hard to match that. We can't match that genomic record up with the pedigree performance record for that animal. And so we have to work through those kinds of things. But what we've ended up doing is just like multiple international IDs for an animal with multiple or with an international ID that's different than the genomic ID, we created a cross-reference. And we just match things up. And part of the extract program that feeds into the evaluation identifies those and says, here's an animal that's in the pedigree file with this ID and in the genomics file with this ID. And then they get matched up. I want to talk a little bit about the common interface record we've created. So we created a layout for an input record that all of the associations use to send data to associations. So we don't have to worry about different formats from different associations. They're all the same. And that record must meet a standard set of criteria. And if it doesn't meet that criteria, then it's rejected. Record by record, not the whole group, just the animals that don't. And so some of those criteria are simple little data edits. The weaning weight has to be after the birth date. Sex code has to be one of three codes, those kinds of things. We set it up to be a delimited file, a text delimited file, so it's easy to transmit, easy to send, easy to recognize, easy to look at if you're debugging things. And we've set up an upload or processing portal that is available for partners, IGS partners, to send data at any time from their database. They can send data at any time, and that data, as soon as it's received, the system that received the data processes. It goes through several edit checks, and it sends back messages that says this record is not accepted, this record is accepted, and then the association can fix the records that not accepted and resend it. And so they get immediate notification, and the good records automatically go into the database. So as you'll see later on when I get into the kind of the process, the whole key to automation is there's no human intervention. It goes by itself. There's only human monitoring of what's going on. All right, so let's get a little bit into the IGS database. I hope that all shows on there. In the lower right, you can see we've got 17 million animals in this combined database, and we're adding about 350,000 records a year. And you can see the associations that are in there. Of that 17 million, there's 7.2 million purebreds. And the rest are hybrid cattle, crossbred cattle. In terms of phenotypes, we have about, there's somewhere around 12 million animals with at least one measurement in their record. In addition to that, there's 132,000 genotype records that go into the evaluation. That's the fastest growing piece of data that goes into our evaluation right now. We got 165,000 records. And I did look up the sire usage. So this is kind of the sire usage. There are six sires in this database that have progeny in 12 different associations. There are eight sires that have progeny in 11 associations. Now I might point out that if I've got a sire with two progeny in my association, and he's in, but their data is in a database that have progeny on 200 or have records on 200 progeny, then all of my progeny that don't have very many, every sire that doesn't have very many progeny in my association gets credit for all of the progeny that are in the other associations. I mean, that's the one benefit of really combining these. The power of putting that data together leverages every piece of information that's in the database for everybody that's in the database. So if Simmental has four progeny out of an Angus sire, and Red Angus has 200 progeny out of that same Angus sire, every one of those four progeny in the American Simmental Association database gets credit for it, is out of a sire that had 204,000 progeny. And so that's good. And then you go down to the bottom one and you have almost 24,000 sires that are in at least two associations. So that's kind of how this, at least the sires are spread out. I had another interesting one that I must not have included that. We've got, in terms of different IDs, we've got one animal that has 13 different international IDs. We've got, and three of those are from the same association. But, if you've ever done association work, when you're building pedigrees and you're bringing in outside information, you don't always know that this is the same record as another record that's in your database, and you don't have it all matched up. But that's one of the issues with our cross-reference. All right, the last thing I have is really talk about the automatic evaluation. So again, it's automatic, it runs without human intervention, and it runs with human monitoring. So right now, here's the schedule. Right after midnight on Tuesday, early Tuesday morning, a system starts that extracts the pedigree and the performance files and other support files for the genetic evaluation. Then a notification is sent when that finishes successfully. That notification triggers data prep step to start. That data prep step does adjustments, forms contemporary groups, gets the data that can be fed right into the evaluation. When that step processes successfully, a notification is set, and the genomic merging step starts, where the genomic information is processed and accumulated and prepared for evaluation. Then when the genomic monitoring step is done, the genomic prep stuff is done, another notification is set, and the actual bolt genetic evaluation starts. And then when that step finishes, notification set is started or set, and the post-processing starts with the end result being that EPD files are then put on a website or the site, and individual associations can download those EPDs and start putting in their system. Throughout this whole process, then there consists a series of emails and notifications, and there's web reports that we monitor. So we can just watch the evaluation go. We can see what the counts are. We can see if something looks out of whack. But the key is that we don't start and stop things. We don't manually do anything. It just takes care of itself. And that's the real key to this whole process. The last panel is going to talk about the advantages of frequent evaluations, but I think they're wonderful. And I say that from a data prep point of view. The pressure that's on when you do one every 6 months of having that data right and knowing that if it's wrong, it sits there for 6 months before it gets corrected. And now, even if we find out, oh, there's some data that got put in there wrong, it can get fixed in the next evaluation, it's going to get corrected. And the immediate feedback of that and the idea that it just takes care of itself much better than long-term evaluations, I just really like that. So that's kind of really all I have to say. What I do is not rocket science. It's not, it's fun. It's it sure is fun, and it's taking a look at the data and trying to figure out things from the data is good, but the statistics and the hard work is done within the processing system itself. That's all I have. Thank you.
Steve, don't go too far. If you'll take a question or two. Okay. Any questions from the floor? I might need some young person to run the mic if they're too far in the back. Laura.
I just have.
I'm a young person.
Okay.
Steve, today.
Oh. I just have a comment about genetic evaluation and going to the weekly evaluation. Steve. For the past 45 years, you probably got to work every single Christmas, right? This year, you won't have to. So, congratulations.
A consolation for that year. Excellent.
Somehow, I think he'll still be working.
Any other questions for Steve?